We have two feature items for you this week. The first is taken from the latest Devon Insight magazine. I know some of you receive this magazine either in the large print version or on a memory stick, but others do not. And I thought it appropriate this week to hear the farewell statement from Insight's chief executive, Graham Flynn, who's moving on after 13 years in post.
Having led Devon Insight for 13 years, including its centenary year, I've taken the very difficult decision to move on. Please be assured that this has not been a sudden decision, but a carefully planned transition of leadership to minimise disruption to the staff team and our frontline services. My news has come as a shock to many, but it is completely my decision and mine alone. 13 years in one post is a long time. I'm looking forward to a break with my family, some travel, and then on to the next adventure. I took over the leadership of Devon Insight in 2013, following a period of hiatus. Much has changed in the ensuing decade. I'm delighted that Devon Insight is now a multi-award-winning charity of local, regional, and national standing. We've received national recognition for our holistic needs assessment, the Sight Loss MOT, and our specialist counselling services. I'm particularly proud of our work during the COVID-19 pandemic, where we coordinated so much support for our residents living with sight loss, and our workplace COVID protocols were adopted nationally. It's been a privilege representing people with little or no sight in Devon. My consortium of sight loss charity leaders from across the southwest of England is now part of the National Visionary Network. Our campaigns have included accessible information for NHS patients, helped keep train station ticket offices from closure, and provided disability awareness training for bus drivers. We also pioneered a unique assistive technology partnership with Sight and Sound Technology, and we work closely with the Retina Clinic London to raise awareness of cutting-edge clinical trials and research. Fire safety is very close to my heart. We were one of the first community partners for the Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service home safety visits that so many of you have engaged with. Mahatma Gandhi said, "Be the change that you wish to see in the world." I hope that my tenure at Devon Insight has been characterised by honesty, integrity, passion, empathy, and kindness. I've been blessed with a talented, committed, and passionate team of staff and volunteers. I would like to thank everyone at Devon Insight, past and present, for their support over the last 13 years. You know who you are. I wish my successor, Richard Pike, the very best of luck, and hope that he will continue the fight to make Devon a sight loss friendly county. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart.
Graham said many of the things that I would say about my time with Dairon's Journal, especially about the quality of his team and the support given to him. He's been an important figure in the visually impaired world, both locally and more widely, and will be much missed. His successor is Richard Pike, and we shall no doubt hear from him in the next edition. In the meantime, we have another interesting biography from the Soundings contributor, Liz. This time she brings us the story of Joseph Paxton, a British gardener, architect and engineer, and a classic rags-to-riches story of Victorian times.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz here from East Kilbride. Let's think about this for a minute. Have you enjoyed a banana recently? Or perhaps had a walk around a municipal park? Or even marvelled at what they can grow in the greenhouse? Well, that's my man for this chat, Joseph Paxton. It was, in fact, a classic Victorian saga of rags to riches, a poor family, an astonishing talent and hard work, and I suppose you could also say meeting the right people at the right time, which meant by the end of his life, our Joseph had become one of the leaders of society, He was an elected MP and he was a friend of royalty. And it's all to do with growing things in the soil. Joseph Paxton was born in the countryside, which seems especially fitting, and he was born in 1803. He was the seventh son of a farming family in Bedfordshire. He was so keen on growing anything from as long as he could remember that he pretended he was a little bit older and managed to find a post as a garden boy at the age of 15. In fact, he was 13 at the time, and rose very quickly to be the leader of the Horticultural Society's gardens at Chiswick. These gardens were very close to the grand lands owned by William Cavendish, the 6th Duke of Devonshire. Both keen gardeners, they met, they walked, they talked plants, they talked growing things. And William Cavendish, the Duke, offered Paxton at the age of 20 years old the chance to become the head gardener at Chatsworth. According to Paxton's own account, he was so desperate to take up this chance of a lifetime that he rode in the coach arriving at Chatsworth at 4:30 in the morning. He scaled the garden wall. He set the staff to work. He explored the gardens. He ate breakfast with the housekeeper and met his future wife, the niece of the housekeeper, one lovely woman called Sarah Bowne, all before 9 o'clock. She was the woman for Joseph. And as they say, behind every great man, etc., etc. And when he was devoting 15, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week to his gardening pursuits, she managed the family and kept the steady Paxton family going. The 6th Duke had recognised Paxton was an amazing find. Let him redesign the garden. Let him skillfully move mature trees. Next on the list, to build and set in a proper setting the Emperor Fountain. Now, this was no wee thing you would have in your back garden. It was twice the size of Nelson's Column and required Paxton to manage and plan and successfully create a lake in the grounds of Chatsworth. His interest in growing plants led him to seek a way of growing exotic plants such as highly prized pineapples and more in Britain. The glasshouses at Chatsworth were very dilapidated. He made plans. He set about planning using new ideas in glass design, and he actually made a project built on a ridge and furrow roof, which gave him a much stronger structure, which meant, of course, it withstood the storms in Britain, and it meant these exotic plants could be grown. One such plant had been brought to Britain in 1836. This was the aptly named Victoria Regia Lily. It had never grown. With Paxton's help and Paxner's design, they built the Victoria Regia House. The water lily grew and grew so large that the extensive leaves floated on the water. Paxton called them a natural feat of engineering. And let's see, he was very keen for a bit of publicity on this great adventure that he'd managed to create. He floated his daughter, Annie, on a leaf of this giant lily plant. Of course, the glass house and the heat in the glass house meant that it was more than just lilies that could be grown. And that's why there's the banana connection. Because the Cavendish bananas, so-called because of the Duke of Devonshire, were cultivated by Paxton in these greenhouses. And this branch of banana actually accounts for what you're eating, because it's now the one that's the most commonly consumed by banana lovers in the Western world. All by our man Paxton. What else could he do? Well, for his employer, he built the Great Conservatory, which was at that time the largest glass building in the world. And then we come to what was probably internationally seen as Paxton's greatest masterpiece. Because, you see, there was a certain husband of Queen Victoria, Prince Albert. He wanted to please the Queen. He wanted to show the country how modern thinking and innovative the great country of Britain was. Show off to the world, show off to the British people. We want a design that will mean we could put all these wonderful new inventions of our age sited collectively in London so that people could travel on the new railway and see what wonders the Victorian age was bringing. The Royal Commission was appointed, Prince Albert was leading it, and by 1850 Prince Albert was considerably in angst because they had 245 designs and none of them, apart from two, were remotely suitable. And the two they had would take too long to build. And there were already people saying, you can't build this great big building in Hyde Park, you'll destroy the trees. In stepped our Joseph Paxton. The story goes, by now he was a director of a railway company and making big money at that, and actually bored at the meeting to discuss the railway, and started to sketch his ideas for a design for this great exhibition project of Prince Albert. In fact, you go now to the Victoria and Albert Museum on that site and you can still see the sketch that Paxton drew while at the railway meeting. This design fitted the bill. Paxton brought in modular, prefabricated design, the wonderful use of glass, such that the building known as the Crystal Palace was built in only 7 months. It was itself a demonstration of British technology. And even more, he managed to change the design of the Crystal Palace and give it a taller middle section so many of the trees in Hyde Park could be accommodated inside the building and there was less destruction to the park. So really, Paxton, by that time, had become an example to every stage of society in Victorian times of a man who, with hard work and talent and supporters in the right places, could build the glorious Crystal Palace. Now, it was later moved at the end of the exhibition, and sadly, it was burnt down in 1936. But we still have lovely images of the original Crystal Palace, and we also have the newspaper accounts and the personal stories of visiting the palace, a wonder of the world. Because, you know, as well as people in society and moneyed folk, who could visit the Great Exhibition of 1851. This was the beginning of package tour holidays, and millions of ordinary folk dug deep and took their courage in their hearts and stepped on the new invention of the railways. In later life, Paxton developed more gardens, and especially this was the time when he wanted to look after ordinary people. He was the designer of the first ever municipal park in Birkenhead, which was seen by a certain young American designer called Frederick Olmsted, and he rather liked this plan. And when he returned to New York, he was the designer of Central Park. So our Joseph had influence even over in the United States. I think you must agree with me that by the time he passed away in his early 60s, Joseph Paxton had led an amazing life. And you know, aside from his design for the Crystal Palace and the Great Exhibition, he really has enriched all our lives. Where would we be without a banana sandwich picnic on a bench in a local park? And with that conclusion, I'm going to leave you. All my very best wishes to you all.
TNF Soundings.